The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
Okay, that's good to practice with you. Seems like maybe the center of gravity in the chatted questions is something in the realm of feeling grief, love. So where to begin? We're coming to be unintimidated by our feeling life. That's a big part of our training on the cushion, is to be unintimidated by our pain, our longing, love. And feeling, it said we're in the age of affectivism, affect, feeling. Urgencies, behavioral tendencies, emotion, mood, all of that, age of affectivism. This is kind of dominant in how we are thinking about humans in this phase. And that makes a lot of sense to me. Maybe I've just been affected by that, but feeling to me is at the heart of our Buddhist practice. Because our suffering constellation, what the Buddha said, the path is about suffering and the end of suffering. That is largely an affective emotional experience. And peace is the kind of resolution of affect. And so we're coming into this deep relationship. Like, can I not be disorganized, not be destroyed by my feeling life? And over time, we develop more and more courage to trust that the winds of feelings will blow, but they will not blow something over inside of us. That's a confidence we develop. Ajahn Sucitto is talking about the deeper reaches of enlightenment, said that what comes is a kind of what is necessitated is a more fundamental reorganization of our relationship with pleasure and pain. That simple. And the feeling that we live with moment by moment, sense of arousal and valence, positive, negative, neutral, the arousal and valence that we live with, we're coming to have a very clear relationship with it and one of deep permission for that to be what it is. And this equanimous relationship with our feeling allows us to move through life in a less brittle way, allows us to love more deeply, fervently, allows us to care and to invest in that which is impermanent, even knowing that the process of letting go will be deeply evocative. And yet we allow anicca to actually inform our love. And as I was saying yesterday, that is a kind of process of real gratitude. That we are no longer living in the illusion of permanence. And that at some deeper level, the assumption of like this will go on forever, some of that spell is broken. And what we break into is like a kind of amazement, awe of just like this is here. We have been born, bookended by eternity, and yet in this little geologic blink of time, here we are, And that breeds a measure of amazement. And so what else are we going to do when we know that deeply other than love? What else are we going to do? We're practicing in such a way that hatred becomes less and less tenable, that just gritting our way through becomes less and less tenable. To what? To what? This, friend of mine early in practice, said, that he felt like he was living a dress rehearsal for his life. And when's the show? This is it. This is it. That's it. This is not a dress rehearsal. This is our life. This is all we know we have is right here. And that to me, even as I say that, like some kind of feel a little teary, This is it. And the love and the grief feel kind of woven together. The poignancy of having been born, of having found a path, of having created a life that feels suspended in networks of care and respect and love, Dhamma, Sangha, That is very touching. And we don't always need to be crying. We don't always need to be moved by the poignancy of a Nietzsche. I would not counsel everyone to always be reflecting on the tremble at the center of all things. That's not always medicine, but it should never be too far. Should never be too far. And when it's not too far, this contemplation of a Nietzsche, some people take every day, recalling that all is of the nature to change. Everything that I hold dear is of the nature to change. I cannot avoid being separated from it. This is a way, to my mind, of actually pre-grieving, of a certain kind of anticipatory grieving that is not defensive in nature. Sometimes anticipatory grieving has a feeling of, an unwillingness to love, to lay one's heart on the table, to put it all on the table. But this anticipatory grieving is more a kind of knowing, like, yeah, the enormity of grief that actually I have to acclimatize to that over time, over months and years, maybe decades. We acclimatize to the enormity of the loss. And that is, we just take maybe homeopathic doses of that day by day. Okay, yeah, this cannot last. And that engenders not actually fear, but more love. I said yesterday that the only redemption for grief is something like, love and art. And I feel that in art sometimes. It's like, oh my goodness, that's redemption. Yeah. But I'm not an artist. And so I've only got one choice. So we vow to make our love vaster, for it to be so thoroughly kind of infused with the teachings on dukkha, on anicca, And as we come to be more at ease, unintimidated by our own pain, by our feeling, by our longing, that opens a space in which more radical kinds of love can grow, And that is the lesson of grief is not, it's actually not even about loss. It's about the necessity of expanding our love such that it becomes even more radical. And we take the legacy of maybe the person we have lost, that which we have lost, and we build a kind of our eulogy and tribute and memorial is takes the form of a kind of more radical love. And we also look beyond the horizon of our own life that yeah, that we're part of a lineage that extends before we were born and after we die. And the unit of measurement for love is not even one lifetime, but may our lives, contribute to the lineage of care, sensitivity, safety, love that existed before we were born and will continue on. We vow in our own idiosyncratic way to contribute to it. So I offer this for your consideration and yeah, tender to be together in all of this. Okay. You all take good care.